Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So, Steve, with all the testing going on in Jerez coming up very soon, in fact, tomorrow as we're talking, but it will be yesterday if you're listening to this or the day it's released, I'm actually quite optimistic that we're going to see bikes on track very soon, Steve. It feels to me like MotoGP is here now. And although I'm still a bit concerned about the pandemic, I am quite excited now.
Yes, definitely. I was looking earlier, I was reading some bits in the paper about like how Bradle's going to be riding the GP bike at this test, and all the superbike riders I saw on like social media started flying out. Like Scott Redding was posting some stuff earlier. I was like, oh, bikes on track.
Yeah.
I was like, I know we're still in the middle of this pandemic, but it's starting to feel real again.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. Yeah. And after, especially after like the Sepang test was cancelled, I was beginning to feel a bit like, oh no, it's going to be a shit show again. We're not going to get racing to the middle of the summer again. There's all these new strains of the virus everywhere. But now I feel quite good about it again. And I'm sure by the time we talk next week, I'll be a mopey little shit again. And I'll be very sad. I don't know what's going to happen. But right now, in this moment, I'm half a bottle of gin and three quarters of a bottle of wine in. And I'm feeling good about racing this year.
You're looking very rosy in the cheek there, mate.
I feel pretty rosy in the cheeks, actually.
No, I am starting to sort of tentatively think we could be on for the start of the season somewhere around where it's scheduled to be.
Yeah, I think that actually we may get the Qatar race and all the testing there. I think Qatar might actually happen this year. What happens after Qatar, I don't know, but Qatar might happen.
It's going to be a tough way. There's, like you said, there's so many new variants of this bloody virus popping up. People are starting to do, like, each country's rolling out their own vaccination program, so things are looking up, but at the same time, it's still there. And it's like that little annoying STD you picked up in your teenage years. It's always in the background.
You just promised can't get rid of it. Me you would never tell anyone about that, Steve.
Oh, damn it. Sorry. you know what I mean? It's always there, just niggling in the background.
Yeah, I know. I am aware. Anyway, before we get too deeply into our personal lives, shall we dive into the show?
Let's get into it before Good we get too stuff. Drunk.
That's it. So I'm Tim, he's Steve, and this is For the Love of MotoGP. So we've had a brief discussion, Steve, about what's been going on. We know that there's testing going on at Jerez tomorrow or yesterday, depending on when you're listening and the weird time travel thing that is podcasting. It's not an official test as such, is it, in which the riders can't actually go out and ride their MotoGP bikes. It's a lot of MotoGP riders riding road-going superbikes, and Stefan Bradl is there riding the Honda RC13V?
Something along that line, yeah. That's a private test, though, I think.
Oh, okay. Is it not part of the same?
No, I think if you jump onto the MotoGP website, I think that one is actually a private part of the test.
Okay, but it's still at Jerez, right?
Yeah, it's still at Jerez, but I think that is why he can actually hop onto a MotoGP bike.
Okay, well, he's a test rider, isn't he? So I assume he's just using some of Honda's allocated testing days.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's going to jump on there. and do a little bit of testing, which would be pretty cool and nice to see. Who else is going to be there? There will be Maverick Vinales is there.
Yeah, I assume he's just riding an R1, is he?
Yeah, I think there were Rogo and Superbike. Zarco is there. Michele Pirro.
Oh, Michele Pirro might be riding a GP bike.
Might he? That's pretty cool.
Well, I just assume so. He's a test rider, so he would be allowed to ride one if it's one of Ducati's allocated test days. But then again, he's also a test rider for the World Superbike Project, so he could be riding a superbike.
Yes, he does get around there, boy. He's everywhere. I didn't realise how many Moto2 riders there are there.
Oh, there's a lot of them. But they're all riding road bikes as well, aren't they?
Yeah, I did see on Instagram earlier, like Canet was putting stuff on there. Jorge Martin was putting stuff on there about being there. Loads of them.
Did you see Jorge Martin in the Pramac leathers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. Got a little snippet. Only a quick flash fire look at him and that, but he does look pretty good. They actually suit him really well. Come on, March.
Yeah, that's it. So March 3rd will be the start of testing at Qatar. That's replacing the Sepang test. There was always going to be a test at Qatar, but it's been extended now. So it starts March 3rd. There will be 2 days of setup, followed by 1 day of rookie and test rider test. And then the 6th, 7th, 10th, 11th and 12th of March will all be everyone testing. I actually really feel for the rookies this year because they're going to have 6 days testing before the Qatar GP. Like, that's nothing. Last year, the rookies got 15 days.
I was going to say they're losing quite a few days now, aren't they?
And think about how slow like Alex Marquez was compared to the field at the beginning of the season. And he had 9 days extra testing. And I mean, Alex Marquez really came on, so there's no criticism of him. But it's just 6 days testing is not enough.
There's a lot going to be lost. The only thing I hope is, like say, we get the Qatar race straight away, whereas we had that big break last time between testing and then the start of the GP rounds.
Yeah, that's true.
Any luck just coming straight off the back of these tests, straight onto the race weekend, and hopefully they'll be able to take that away with them.
Yeah.
And then try and think of the race weekend as 3 days of testing slash race, so you get a bit extra.
I mean, I really think the rookies, so Martin, Marini and Bastianini, kind of all have to look at this year as a test year, most of it.
Yeah.
It's going to be so up in the air. Rookie of the year battle between them is going to be fun. And there's also the option of, who's the Aprilia fella? Ooh, Bradley Smith and Salvadori.
Yeah.
I imagine, would also be in that rookie of the year battle if he gets the ride over Smith. But we'll have to wait and see for that.
I forgot about that little battle. It's going to be nice to see. Well, not nice for them, but it'll be nice for us to see who comes out on top.
It will be now. It's only 6 days. They've got to do it in.
That's it. It's going to be like a showdown. It's going to be some sort of like Big Brother contestant kind of SAS, get me out of here thing.
It's going to be the talking point of the test, I think, actually. I mean, it probably will be for me. I'll be really watching it because it's going to be interesting to see who gets that ride.
Yeah, because everyone else is going to be testing. They're going to be going about the business. So they know who's got that ride. But these two have got to head it off against each other to battle it out to really get going.
And this probably is a terrible thing because Bradley Smith is their test rider. They need him to be doing his test rider roles at this point if they've only got 6 days to get ready for the season.
Exactly. So if I was him, I'd be really pissed.
I think if I'd ever owned an Aprilia at this point, I'd be really pissed. Like, I'm just so fed up with the way Aprilia are treating their riders that I just can't even comprehend it. If I was a rider right now, there's no way I would be looking at Aprilia as a career option.
No. That is a minefield of all sorts of God knows what in that garage and team, and I don't think I'd want to be anywhere near it.
I saw an interview with, or read an interview with Sam Lowes. And he was saying, he's like, Aprilia still haven't sorted their shit out. They still don't know what's going on. They're still treating their riders like shit. He's like, it's a joke. They're an absolute joke of a team. And he really laid into them. I was reading it like, whoa, he is not a happy man. Damn good.
I mean, I made the feelings clear at the time when they got rid of him and how they got rid of him, what I thought. And it's never really changed. I want to see the team get better because they're on the grid.
Yeah.
But like you say, they need to sort the shit out.
Yeah.
They need to start respecting the riders that they've got in and realize at some point, people aren't going to come to you. Because just simply the way you treat your riders and what the honest, realistic options of or chances of winning a MotoGP race on that machine.
Almost nil.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to dangle a massive carrot in front of a rider's nose to get them to stay. That's got to be last chance saloon.
Especially when we look at, look at what KTM did last year. KTM have been on the on the grid for less time than Aprilia, and yet they've managed to get a multiple race winning machine, loads of podiums last year. They've managed to really develop the team, create the satellite team. They've done everything you need to do, and they've really been on it. And yet we're still watching Aprilia run round at the back and fuck riders over, and just not really look like a professional outfit.
No, I feel sorry for the guys that are there, like Aleix. Aleix is sticking out, and I think some of the results he's had on that bike to show how talented he is. When you compare it to his teammate, who's like languishing X amount of places behind him.
Yeah.
You know, he's stuck it out there for God knows how many years since has he been there from the start? I think he has.
No, he hasn't, because Spraddle and Bautista were there for a little while, weren't they? It was after he got dropped from Suzuki, he went to Aprilia.
That's the one, yeah. So he's been there, what, 3 years now? Three or four.
Yeah, I would say 3 years.
I think it's three. But the guy's sticking it out. He's slugging it out, which is the longest stint that most people have put in. So they should be actually thankful that he's there.
I mean, he hasn't really got a choice, though, has he? Because where else is he going to go? If Aprilia drop him, like, no one else is going to pick him up at this point.
No, I think he's probably done enough to raise some eyebrows on that bike, but not quite enough to actually start making people look and think, right, we want him in RT.
He's been on the grid for a long time, though, hasn't he? He's been on the grid for nearly a decade, so he's been there.
Yeah, he's been around the block. Bless him. But he's still got plenty of riding time in him. And he's still a bloody good rider.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. We'll see what happens with him. That's his choice to remain there. Good luck to the boy.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And we've done that thing again, Steve, where we just start talking about Aprilia and just go off on one about them.
I was then realizing that. We've always said, like, there'll be a show where we speak heavily about Aprilia. We might have just made that show.
One day we'll do an Aprilia focused show, but today is not that day, Steve. So
it's not that day.
We'll keep racking through the news. I saw a nice quote from Gigi Deligna of Ducati, who said that Ducati are, and I quote, going to spend a year developing their aerodynamics. Nice. End quote. Now, I feel like I know there's a development freeze going on this year, so there's not a lot you can do, and I don't know the ins and outs of this development freeze. To be fair, I've not read deeply into it. I don't know whether it's just engine development or whether they're allowed to develop the chassis and stuff. But I feel like Ducati maybe don't need to be focusing on their aero package so much, because they really need to learn how to make a bike that goes around a corner, or a bike that deals with the new Michelin rear tyre, which we know last year's bike didn't.
My personal opinion is bullshitting. And he's said that.
Yeah, good point. That's a very GG thing to do.
Yeah, he's thrown a bone to the biggest dog in the park, and they're going to chase it. And what he's really working on is the internals of the lunchbox under the back of that seat.
Yeah, actually, that's probably a really good point, because why would he tell us exactly what he's actually working on? He wouldn't. That doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, you're right, actually. They're certainly working on something else behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Steve. I take back my criticism of Ducati. I think you're right about this one.
I did see that little article, and I didn't read it, because I read that little bit and just went, bullshit, move on.
Your bullshit detector is much better than mine.
Yeah, that was literally it. I was like, no, bollocks, GG. You're talking shit, mate. And I moved on. I thought, you're not doing that at all. Because like you say, there's a freeze. Why the hell are you going to develop something you've already spent God knows how much on developing? You were the first ones to really hammer it out with a hammerhead. Just realised what I did there.
Yeah, nice.
They're working on something completely different, and that is just a ruse to turn heads in a different direction.
Yeah, I'm with you completely. And actually, I'm a little bit disappointed, because although I think it would be the wrong decision to be focusing very heavily on their aero right now, it would also have meant we've got some really cool looking fairings and things again. Like, we would get another hammerhead coming on or something really exciting.
I think they go completely the other way. And all of a sudden we see riders with like one of those cyclist style helmets that almost comes all the way down the back. And
well, do you remember when Lorenzo got that shark helmet that was worth like an extra 5 kilometers an hour or something because of the cool design it had?
Yes. I think some of the guys actually still use that as well.
Yeah, they do. Shark. I think Shark must have like a patent on it or a copyright on the design or something, because they're the only ones that have that exact shape.
Yeah. I'm sure Ducati are probably spending a small amount of their budget on little snippets of aerodynamics. They're going to
Oh, I mean, I'm sure they're still spending a ton of money on their aero, and I'm sure they'll be putting a lot of stuff through the wind tunnel, but I think you're right, that's not going to be what they're completely focusing on throughout the year. But then again, maybe with the development freezes in place, maybe that is what they're going to, because that's all they can do throughout the year.
It could well be. They might solely focus on it. We're saying this, they could be redesigning, let's say, the swinging arm to deal with the corner speed issue.
Yeah.
And they could be developing a completely new fairing that work coincides with this new swing arm to make the air flow nicely across that back wheel and through the scoops and
that's
the shrouds
that
they've put.
Yeah.
So, but no, my first thought was, no, bollocks, GG. Talk a shit, mate.
Yeah,
move
that's
on.
Fair. Okay. So let's go for the Marc Marquez updates then, shall we?
Let's go for it.
Marc Marquez still on antibiotics after his most recent checkup at the hospital. The arm is healing as expected after the bone graft, but the infection is still there. So antibiotics. Now, I am someone that I guess I always feel like I know a lot about medicine from just the time, the amount of injuries I've had and the time I've spent in hospital chatting to doctors and stuff about myself. But it sort of baffles me that someone can have an infection within a bone that's lasted this long. Now, I know that's naivety on my part because this must be normal. But isn't it amazing that even with the antibiotics, the infection's still there and he's still got to be taking them? Like, when you and I go for antibiotics, you know, for that cheeky STD that won't go away, I take like a week's course and that's done. But he's been on them for a long time now and continuing to be so after this most recent checkup.
I guess the only way my head reads into this is the amount of work he's had done in that small space on his arms. You think that's not a great massive area. And then when you narrow that down to just like the bone, he's had, what, 12 screws going into that damn thing?
Oh, more than that, I think. It's been a lot.
Yeah, grafts. That thing is like Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
There's so much potential there to pick up infection. You know, this bone, his body's working overtime, 24-7, to fill these gaps, heal this bone. And the only thing I can think of is there's just something in there that won't give up.
Yeah, and then like obviously we are all fully aware, aren't we, that there is this rise of like antibiotic resistant bacteria and stuff. So maybe it's something to do with that, but who knows? They're not telling us any of this. This is just you and I speculating. But what we do know is that it's healing as expected, apparently, and that he's still on antibiotics. But he's probably the only person that's quite glad that the Sepang test has been pushed back at this point.
He is. I'm still really doubtful of when we're going to see him.
Like I've been saying for close to a year now, I'm not convinced we're ever going to see him racing a MotoGP bike again in anger. I know I keep talking about it like he's coming back. Part of that is I'm very hopeful he's coming back because I don't want to see a championship without him. I think it's going to be a real shame to lose. Imagine losing Valentino Rossi in 2005. Like, it would feel like that. Like,
absolutely.
A legend is gone before he's really stamped his mark on the championship. Like, he's got championships in him. He's got another 3 or 4 championships in him, no problem. It would be a real shame to see him go. So I'm very hopeful that he'll come back, but I don't think he will.
No, I'm starting to have my doubts. I think he'll come back and give it a go, but I think that will be the point where he realises, shit, I can't actually do this now.
He's going to be like, right, I've got to be a rider coach for Alex now.
Yeah, basically he'll be in the grid alongside his dad. Basically just in his brother's ear, do this, do that. But like you say, it'll be an incredible shame. It's such a loss to the sport as well, and we would absolutely be robbed of so many amazing years worth of racing. You know my thoughts on him. I had him pipped to beat Ago's record.
Not anymore, mate. I think that one's done. I've won that drink.
The best way to word it. I've just been robbed of my prediction.
Yeah, and now you owe me a pint, my friend. Thank you.
I do owe you a pint. The way you drink like fish, I think I owe you a barrel.
Nah, I'll just take the one pint, mate. The deal was just a pint.
Okay. Well, he hasn't shown me the size of the glass.
I mean, I think a pint is the same measurement, no matter the size of the glass.
I was doing a bit of the round. You can have one pint glass suspended in this massive...
Yeah, like, exactly.
Keep filling.
That'll do it.
Pims is nasty.
See, you're on that 4-year out-of-date Pims is going to be doing you a good one, mate.
Jesus Christ.
Right, and in an update to our last show as well, our goodbye show to Davide Brivio, we have had a bit of news come out of Suzuki with Shinichi Sahara I actually spent the day practicing how to say his name because I knew I was going to try and do it drunk on the fly, and I knew I'd get it wrong, and I think I just got it wrong again, but I've said it and we're going to stick with it. I'm not going to embarrass myself again.
Go with that one.
But he is one of the higher ups within the team, and he has said that Suzuki are not looking to replace Davide Brivio with anyone outside of Suzuki. Instead, they're going to divvy up his job between the guys that are already there.
Nice. Fair enough, I guess.
Yeah, it happens all the time, doesn't it? Within the higher ups of a racing team, someone will leave, and rather than hire someone else, they'll be like, well, you know, I'll take an extra 10 grand a year and I'll do 10% of his job, and they just chop it up like that.
Yeah, it'll work. Plus the fact the guys that are there already know what's going on. So taking on a little bit of extra responsibility should make the transition to having a completely new team manager in there a little bit easier.
Yeah, and the thing is with Suzuki as well is they've built such a unique scenario, haven't they? Like as a team, it's a very unique place, I think, for guys to be working in. And so pulling anyone in from the outside who doesn't understand how this Suzuki team works, if you pull in like Olivio Loi, or like a Wilco Zeelenberg, like we spoke about, they don't know how this Suzuki team is working. And this Suzuki team has built an amazing bike. They won the championship last year out of nowhere. No one expected it. So you can't really expect someone to come in from the outside and be able to replicate that.
No, no. Someone's not going to just come in and slot in perfectly straight away. And it doesn't strike me as the kind of place where they'd want someone to come in and start upsetting the apple cart. You know, they've got the Zen music going in there. They're nice and chilled and peaceful. And they don't want Mr. Whoever with his heavy rock metal coming in and blasting it out.
Yeah, that'd be me going in there just listening to some crazy punk.
Yeah, yeah, sort of honest. I'd probably come in with some of my 80s trash rock and be like, hey. Let's get loads of people looking at me. What the fuck just walked in?
Who's this fella? Let's get him out.
You lost me? Yeah, delivery's round the back.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So you need the tradesman's entrance.
Yeah, fuck off.
Right, I think that's pretty much it for the news, Steve. A couple of points after our last show. A few of you did email in to let us know we were correct about the American high school years being freshman, sophomore, junior, then senior. Thank you very much for that. I like being vindicated when I'm right. I'm very happy to admit when I'm wrong, but I like it when you tell me I'm right, so let's stick with that. And Steve, you mentioned the Brooklyn circuit in the last show as well. So you reminded me, you'd actually told me about this because I'd sort of forgotten because I do that.
I'd forgotten as well until I was writing down like a few bits about the high school and I was like, oh shit, yeah, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I looked it up. Yeah, made in 1903 and then last used just before the war in 1939.
Yeah, and I started looking into this. Wow, what an amazing place. It looks
awesome.
Great. I did find a YouTube video of what it looks like now, and it was like a lot of drone footage over the top. And it's just like you say, it's housing estates, and it's like in between a housing estate and an industrial estate. And then there's just like banked corners just in the middle of like a wooded area. There. Yeah, it looks amazing. I'd quite like to go and just walk around it, but some of
you
it
can
is.
Can drive up to it.
Yeah, in places you can. Some of it's protected though. You can't go into it because it's part of an RAF base or something.
I think it's the old leftover World War II. Base that is still
there. I think
there
a lot of it was demolished for a World War II airfield. Yeah, I think that's why it was stopped being used.
Yeah, sort of sliced through it for airfields and runways. Such a shame.
Yeah.
You watch some of the old footage of these old, like, open top racing cars and bikes going around. It's like insane.
Yeah, I watched some footage from like 1925 or something and it was like completely silent and it was just old school racing cars. I was like, this place looks great. So I did, I have got a link here just to a YouTube video of how it looks like now. I'll drop that in the show notes later.
It's just an insane place. I'd love to go and have a look. Just one to take a picture on that bank and it's 40 degree bank.
Yeah, it looks so good. It looks really cool. I would like to go. So maybe one day, Steve, we'll go and have a wander around.
When we can, we'll go and have a look back. But yeah, the world's very first bank circuit.
Yeah, isn't that mental? The first bank circuit in the world. Like, I would have assumed that would have been one of, like, the American tracks.
Yeah, I had it pitched down as that, just like...
Or even, like, Monza or something with the early banking.
Yeah. I think some Italian circuits did have quite bank circuit, bank corners, but I think they came in somewhere around, like, 1910, something along that line, maybe 1908.
Okay.
It was very, very close. Let's put it that way. But no, this was the very first one.
Yeah.
And it got absolutely destroyed, which is a shame.
Right. Anyway, that's our update, Steve. It's just occurred to me we're nearly half an hour into the show. And although all of you listening will have seen the show title, at least, We haven't actually said what the show's about today, Steve.
We haven't. No, I was looking at that, and I was actually wondering myself if we should just go on a full tangent show and do another one tomorrow.
I think tomorrow I'm going to be a little hungover.
I think you might not be in any fit state, but one thing I am going to have to do before we dive into the real show is go for a pee, because that Pimm's is destroying me.
Okay, in that case, let's take a quick break, and then when you come back, Steve, we will continue our series on the outgoing riders, and today we'll be talking about Cal Crutchlow. But there first, Steve needs to pee, so we're going to have a break, and then we'll be back with you.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Thank you for bearing with us there, guys. Steve has emptied his bladder and we're good to go. So Cal Crutchlow, as we know, is leaving a full-time ride this year from the grid. He is joining the Yamaha test team to become their test rider, replacing the outgoing Jorge Lorenzo, who's, it would be fair to say, has done fuck all this year. Not his fault entirely, but hasn't done a lot. So we'll just dive straight in, as we've been doing in the format of the other shows, and just talk about Cal and his career so far. So Cal was born in Coventry, England, in case that wasn't obvious or by the amount me and Steve bang on about him. And that was on the 29th of October, 1985. 6 years older than me and retiring.
Yeah. That's
sad. Before becoming a professional motorcycle racer, he also dabbled in semi-professional football, which is one of my favourite things. But after receiving a bout of injuries playing football, decided to focus on the motorcycle racing. Ironic, considering how his motorcycle career would then progress.
I was going to say, start as you mean to go on.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe
with an injury.
Yeah, a career in football might have been better.
As well.
Was it ankle or knees? It was a few injuries, like wasn't it, that he would then just go on to keep ruining.
All right. I like the way you picked the sport that is just like so much more likely to absolutely destroy his body.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'd probably still football, but there we go. He chose motorcycle racing and we're thankful for it.
We are certainly thankful for it. And he's certainly made a good career out of it. He's made his money out of it and arguably probably made more money at the premier class of motorcycle racing than he probably would have made unless he became a real superstar in football.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Unless he hit the big time, one of the main teams around the world, then yeah, he's done all right for himself.
Yeah, certainly. And by football, obviously, we mean the UK variant and European variant of football, not the American variant of football. So for you guys out there, it would be soccer.
Soccer.
Can you imagine Cal Crutchlow playing like American football, though?
That would be insane to see fully padded up an angry Cal.
He's quite a small guy, though. I think he'd get wiped out hard, but you're right, he's a bit like a Rottweiler.
He would, you know, he's like a big angry Nan's dog.
A little angry Nan's dog.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Little angry Nan's dog, but with a bit, he's a bit stocky, isn't he?
He is.
He's going to come in.
He's like a bulldog as opposed to a Great Dane.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way to describe him, actually. He's a British bulldog. I like it.
Well, let's hope he doesn't listen to the show, because now he's just going to have that. And we'll probably get angry emails about us describing him as a bulldog.
Probably.
So anyway, he won the UK Junior Challenge in 1991. And in 2001, won the Aprilia RS125 Challenge. that really obviously set him on the way to his yeah. motorcycling career. 2003, he won. Oh, he came runner up in the Yamaha R6 Cup, yeah. which I believe, Steve, you used to watch.
I did. I can remember watching this on telly. I can't remember much about it, but I can remember interviews with Tommy Hill and watching it all the time because they followed the races around. They were all on the same machine.
And it was, it used to follow the British Superbike paddock, right?
That's the one. It was on the same weekend. And yeah, they got given a bike, all the same colors, apart from your number. And yeah, I remember seeing it. I can't remember Carol too much, but I can remember the R6 Challenge Cup.
And the winner of the Challenge Cup was given an R1 factory Yamaha ride in British Superbikes, weren't they?
Yep, Tommy Hill won it, and yeah, he went on to become British Superbike champion.
Yes, in 2011, Tommy Hill, who we've just described, became British Superbike champ. And there's actually a couple of really good films about this era of British Superbikes called they're called I Superbiker. There's at least two or three. I've only ever seen them on Apple TV or Apple Films or iTunes or whatever it was at the time. But I assume you can get them elsewhere. If not, just find them on there. They're certainly worth a watch.
They are pretty good, to be fair. I watched a couple, and they are definitely worth a watch. It sort of shows just what goes on and what it takes to get into the series.
Yeah, and it's just a fun thing to see, I guess, see a documentary series just about something that isn't MotoGP and isn't World Superbikes, to see like a national championship, like given that TV time. And it's fun, like the characters are fun, and I'm going to go on about a livery here and hope I'm not incorrect about it this time. But the Swan Yamaha livery from Tommy Hill's winning year in 2011 was a really, really nice livery. That yellow Swan.
That was, I remember that one. I remember seeing him win that final race. And I was like, it's a nice bike.
And I think he actually went on to become, was he the team boss of the Yamaha?
I think so, yeah. I never really did follow it much after that. I sort of got into World Superbikes, got away from the domestic series. But I think he was something to do with like management in the Yamaha BSB team.
Yeah.
I can't remember off the top of my head exactly what role he played or whether it was in that team. But he did something, some sort of managerial role.
Yeah, that's it. But we're here to talk about Cal and not Tommy. So... Cal went on after the R6 Cup to compete in the British Supersport Championship. He did so for 3 years before winning the championship in 2006. That then gave him a step up that he needed to get into the British Superbike Championship. And I didn't know this, actually. In 2007, in the British Superbike Championship, he rode a Rizla Suzuki alongside Chris Walker.
Apparently, yes. I wasn't following him at this time. I sort of gotten out of the series. With bouncing sort of mainly in World Superbikes and really gotten away from the domestic series. So all this, when I was sort of reading through mates of notes, I was like, really? Really? Really?
Yeah. I mean, at this era, to be fair, I was at high school drinking too much, taking too many drugs and contracting STDs. So I wasn't paying any attention to motorsport full stop at this point.
Nothing's changed.
Except now I pay attention to motorsport.
There is that, and a lot of motorsport as well, I might add.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's a good job I'm not working full-time at the moment, because otherwise it would be a problem.
But in that
2007 season, Crutchlow finished ninth overall, took one pole position and one podium.
Not a bad first year.
No, pretty decent first year, really. If you went into quite any championship and scored a pole position and a podium in your first year, like that's a pretty good result. I'd be happy with that.
I'd take that one home. I'm sure he did. I'm sure he's like, this is good. Sets me on my way.
Exactly. So that set him up for his 2008 run on the championship. This time he was riding for the HM Plant Honda team.
Yes.
And he managed to finish third overall. Probably would have done better if it wasn't for a big crash at Alton Park and a severe ankle injury that hampered him for much of the season. This is kind of, I mean, we'd already joked, haven't we, that he started his injury-prone career playing football. But yes, a very Crutchlow thing to do at this point.
Yeah, I think it's sort of people have probably by this point started to pick up. He was a bit crash happy and a bit injury happy. Well, not happy about it, but, you know, just prone to it.
Yeah, certainly. But it kind of happens, doesn't it? If you're crash happy, you're injury prone. And someone like Marc Márquez, who we've already spoken about in this show, he's a very crash happy man. but always sort of got away with it.
Yeah, I think it's just the way he crashes, where he's just bouncing. One of those lucky buggers that just bounces really well.
He's a very flexible lad, isn't he? Like, you see him. Do you remember that huge crash Marquez had? It was only caught on, like, track CCTV. It was, like, a 220-mile-an-hour... Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it can't have been that fast, but 200-mile-an-hour crash. I can't remember where it was now. I can remember the crash. I can see it quite vividly in my head. But it was in his first year, and it was huge. And he just tumbled.
It wasn't down the straight.
He ended up on the grass on the left-hand side. Yeah, it wasn't a start-finish straight, but it was a straight.
I said he drifted over the left. I'm pretty sure that may have been Mugello.
Potentially.
As you come up over the crest.
So maybe it was the straight.
Yeah, I think it was the start-finish straight. I have it in my head. He came up over the crest and for some reason drifted left.
Onto the grass and then bailed.
Yeah, all you saw on CCTV was like this bike and bloke just going a hell of a pace. Just passed. That could have been Mugello. It was definitely down one of the big straights, because on the left you had like the pit lane wall as well. I'm sure it was there.
Oh, it wasn't a pit lane wall. I don't think. I think on the Mugello straight, the pit lane's on the right anyway.
Yeah, you're right. It is.
But I don't think it was Mugello. But it was a big, speedy crash, and that was the example of that. Is he's so flexible that he just flew about and was fine. Yeah. And Cal Crutchlow is someone that's never been able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, if that was Cal doing that, you know, he'd lay there at the end and go. Go gadget legs and pick himself up and sort of fumble away.
Mm. And that's it, not riding again that weekend. Like, yeah. And if you and I do that, it's game over.
Oh, absolute game over. Yeah, we're dead. Mm. You know, Marquez does it and sort of springs up like a happy gazelle and off he goes, gets on his number two bike and he's out again.
Yeah, exactly.
Crashlow
works.
That's a good one. He just does not bounce.
No, not at all. But 2009 saw him bounce from the British Superbike Championship into the World Supersport Championship, where he rode for the Factory Yamaha team, who were managed by Wilco Zeelenburg. The man gets around.
He does go. I like that fact as well. I was reading that. I was like, really? You know, this doesn't just give you snippets into Cal's career. You get snippets into someone else's career as well.
It's the thing, though, isn't it, within the paddock, is kind of everyone through the generations knows everyone, has worked with everyone at some point. They move around together. It's just one of those, it's a very small group of people when you look at it. For you and I looking at it, we're like, there's 1,000 people that work in that paddock. But for the people competing, they're the only 1,000 people they spend time with, like for years. It. So you get to know everyone, you spend time with everyone, and that group of people moves around together.
Exactly. Like when we've been lucky enough to speak to people from the grid and in the paddock, they've all said, oh, I've known this person for donkey's years, I've known this person for years, and they all know each other.
Yeah.
So it's like a very small internet community. Then they just, like you say, bounce around from job to job, place to place, but they're always in that bubble.
Yeah, exactly. So 2009 saw Cal finish every race in the top four of the World Supersport Championship, apart from a mechanical failure he suffered in Brno. And he won the title, beating out Eugene Laverty in the final round to do so. I didn't really, like, I kind of know Eugene Laverty has kind of always existed and has always been pretty good. I honestly didn't realize he'd really battled for titles.
Yeah, I think in his day, he was a hell of a rider.
Yeah.
In the series that he's done well in, he's done bloody well.
And I know he did. I did go and look at his career a bit more after reading this, and he did do very well in superbikes and stuff as well. I think he had a pretty good season with Aprilia and stuff there. So it's just one of those things, isn't it? We see them on the MotoGP grid and they're riding around near the back and you're like, oh, I'm over this guy. And then you look at their career up until that point, you're like, oh, wow, they were really good.
Yeah, that's it. They're here for a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I often forget sort of how good people are in the past. And then you see them in the MotoGP grid and it's like, what are you doing?
Well, the problem is it then I think it, in, and we've spoken about this before, certainly, is that people at the back of the MotoGP grid, they're still racing against the 20 fastest guys in the world. Like, they're half a second a lap off. If a normal person tried to get on that bike, we'd be 30 seconds a lap off what they're doing. Like, these guys who we think are slow are still one of the 20 fastest guys in the world on a motorbike. So
exactly.
It's very easy, I think, to be an armchair critic of them, but we, every now and again, I think we have to rein in and remember that they're not shit. For a reason. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. They're not just your sofa racer or your average club racer. They are there for a very, very good reason.
Exactly. That's exactly it. So 2010, anyway, saw Cal Crutchlow rise up from the World Supersport Championship to the World Superbike Championship. Once again with the Factory Yamaha squad. And James Toseland was his teammate, who had just returned from a quite unsuccessful stint in the MotoGP paddock.
Yes, yeah, he didn't really do that well.
No.
Didn't set the world on fire, should we say, and was there. Left without a ride and found himself back in World Supers, which often seems to be the case. If you drop out of MotoGP, you drop back into a World Series.
Certainly, if you've come from World Superbikes to start with, yeah. You tend to try MotoGP and then fall back to World Superbikes. And James Toseland was a one-time or two-time World Superbike champ?
Two-time, I believe.
Two-time World Superbike champ, okay. So Cal, anyway, took a double race win at Silverstone that year, won a race in France, and finished fifth overall across the season. But he had started to develop a reputation for really speaking his mind at this point. And there was a quote from, I say quote, I haven't written it down, so I'm not going to quote it correctly. But there was a line from James Toseland that was something like, he can be hard to get on with because he won't pull any punches. He'll just tell you what he thinks.
Yeah, I think by this point, people have started to realise, like, if you ask him a question, you are going to get the straight-up Crutchlow answer that we all know and love.
Yes.
There's going to be no beating around the bush. If you ask him something, you're going to go straight to the point.
Yeah, that's certainly the case.
You'll just get shrugged off.
And he was also, at this time, kind of spouting his mouth off about how he didn't think the MotoGP riders were all that much better than World Superbike riders, wasn't he? Which, arguably, is completely true. So when he got his step up with the Tech 3 Yamaha squad to MotoGP in 2011, there were a lot of eyes on him. A lot of people were saying, go on, you think we're shit, you come and show us how it's done then.
Yeah, I can remember a few sort of pressers saying, you know, he's here, now is the time to back his words up. I can't remember exactly what was said or exactly what Crutchlow had put out there, but I think, yeah, he bigged it up and was now in a position where he had to deliver.
Yeah.
And he didn't do bad.
No, so his first season riding the Tech 3 Yamaha, he finished 12th overall. His best result was a fourth place at the final round of Valencia. And he was Rookie of the Year, scored 70 points on his way to getting that. But to be fair, his only competition for Rookie of the Year was Carol Abram. So, you know, take from that what you will. Again,
Tim's love of Carol Abraham continues.
It's that thing, isn't it? I've just spoken about this, where if someone's riding around the back, we all think they're shit, but at the end of the day, he was still riding around the back from the 20 fastest guys in the world, so he's not a shit guy. He's not a shit guy at all. I'm sure he's a lovely fellow, but he's not a shit rider. He's just not quite as good as everyone else, and that gives us the impression, and especially drunken me, the impression that he was a bit crap.
All right. Speaking of people who sort of left the grid, and we are getting onto it, I saw a cracking video of Tito earlier on in the test paddock. Massive beaming smile, and you could tell he's happy to be there. And, you know, I'm going to be watching that test to see what he does. I'm going to be really interested in that one.
Yeah, he's not with the factory squad, is he? Is he with the Barney team?
Is it? I can't pronounce the name. I can't get it out.
Go on, mate. Spit it out. I'm enjoying it. Keep trying.
No, I'm just going to sit here stuttering.
I'm trying desperately to look it up at the time, but his Wikipedia page is not very up to date, sadly.
No, but no. We'll give Tito his time on the show.
Yes, yeah, certainly. We will do. And that'll probably be next week's show, actually, all about Tito, to be fair.
That's true, yeah. I didn't think of that. I should have kept my mouth shut. We could have just spoke about it then.
Yeah, exactly. Now we've embarrassed ourselves with our slow Googling and our inability to pronounce team names.
We'll find out. We've got time. We'll do it next week.
Yeah, exactly. We've got 7 days to work it out between now and then.
Yes, edit this bit out.
No, we both know, Steve, this bit's going to stay in there, and I'm never going to edit it out because that's part of the fun of the show.
Exactly.
We 2012. Don't Anyway, 2012 saw Cal stay with the Tech 3 squad.
All right.
Fourth place in Qatar. Great first round of the year.
Yeah, if you're going to build, come out the block strong.
Yeah, exactly. And this would be the year, 2012, he was with Dovi. Dovi was his teammate. This is the year I was convinced they had a different livery, but they did not. They had exactly the same livery. And I just have a weird memory of Dovi having a different livery, which in my head looks amazing. but never existed. And it's a strange thing that I still haven't recovered from yet. I've not really got over this. I feel a bit like I was in a parallel universe for a little while, but I'm wrong, so we're going to move on from it. I wish we'd all stop talking about it.
I don't know what you were drinking back then, but it was strong.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't tell you, to be fair, but it was probably more in date than this. So this was also the year where Cal had the amazing Silverstone race in which he had a big crash, which I believe was in practice, but may have been qualifying. I can't
think it was Friday practice.
Okay. It was a big one.
It was a big one. Yeah, I could vaguely remember seeing it at the time. But whatever happened, it was a big, big crash.
Yeah.
And he ended up with a dislocated and broken left ankle.
I haven't written down whether it was the left or right in the notes here, so I will take the 50-50 bet and say yes, it was the left one.
We'll go with the left one. But whatever happened, somehow the dude was past fit to race on the Sunday.
Yes, certainly. With no qualifying, didn't do any qualifying, went to the hospital, got x-rayed, it was broken, it was dislocated. So come Sunday, he was starting from the back of the grid and he had to do the test. Now, when I hear about people doing this, and I know we've seen Marc Marquez do this. Oh, was it Marquez? Well, on his damaged shoulder, he's certainly done it. We've seen guys with broken wrists do it. We've seen them with broken ankles do it. But these tests aren't easy. Like, you've got to hop 10 to 20 times on both legs.
Yeah.
So he had to hop.
Busted ankle.
On a busted ankle to prove
it's
that.
It's insane, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's mad, man. Like, I cannot believe the pain that must have caused him.
The only thing I can imagine is they've been sat in a room next door shooting up so many painkillers that they're just numb from their eyeballs down.
But they're not allowed to be, are they? Because the only painkillers that will do that will also make you drowsy. They'll make you a bit trippy. They're the fun painkillers. Like, painkillers that keep you clear enough in the mind and in the reactions to a race MotoGP bike don't give you the full painkilling effect that something like morphine would.
No. Every single one of those hops, he is going to be in pain, in a lot of pain. But somehow, irregardless, the dude bloody passed it.
Yeah.
And it just shows his determination and just dogged integrity to get back on track. Yeah. But I did see a snippet somewhere that a lot of people were questioning whether he should have been on track on the Sunday.
So this is an interesting conversation, isn't it? Because it's one of those things, should Marc Marquez have ridden in the second race of the year in 2020? It's one of those things where there's a lot of conversation about this going on, and it is sadly the people that make the decisions about whether you can race are paid for by the people that make money if you can race. So there is almost a conflict of interest there, and it's something I think it's not just in MotoGP. I think this happens in all sport, and it's something that really needs to be looked at. There needs to be, I think, an independent medical body who are completely separated from the championships that they work within that make these decisions. Because until that is the case, we're going to get weird things. Do you remember when Danilo Petrucci got wiped out? I think it was by Pol Espargaro. Danilo was leaving the pit lane and Espargaro lost it, got wiped out, got concussion, got back to the pits, went out and rode his second bike, but says he doesn't remember any of it.
Yeah, I can remember that. And that's when they started bringing in all the new markers and guidelines like concussion, head injuries, and all that jazz. Because I remember him saying afterwards in an interview, he was like, don't remember a thing. And all of a sudden, eyes started to sort of look like, who the hell told him he could get out on track? If he can't remember it, he's not in a fit state to pull that motorbike around that field.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So this is a problem with the system we have in place even now. So, should he have been racing? Maybe not. But did he? Yes, he did. And he rode from the back of the grid, finishing sixth place. Sixth place from the back on a dislocated and broken ankle. I remember him quite vividly. I think he overtook Nicky Hayden in like the last couple of corners to take sixth. And it was a really sweet move as well. I remember it quite vividly. But it's one of those things. This is kind of that time where you looked at Cal and you're like, Cal gets injured a lot, but fuck, he can perform when he's hurt.
That's the thing. He seems to switch it up a bit. You know, an angry Cal is a fast Cal.
Yeah.
And a hurt Cal seems to be even bloody quicker.
A hurt Cal is a very fast Cal.
Yeah, you know, if you ever get in a fight with him, you want him 100%, no injuries, calm as a button, and you'll be fine. You get a busted, broken, angry Cal, and you're fucked.
Yeah. 100%. And he certainly, and throughout his career, wasn't it? It was certainly, if, and it got to the point actually where, I don't know if we ever did it on the show, but you and I would joke over text. So we were like, fuck, Cal's just like broken his wrist. Right, I'll get a podium next weekend.
Yeah, literally. I remember sending you messages like that and you pinging me one back saying, yeah, he'll be on the box.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just the way it is. Just some bizarre thing we're here where, I don't know, it's the adrenaline that's coursing through his veins at the time or something that goes through his head, but he just finds another gear and he's off. And like everything seems to click into place. And then, you know, he'll put in an amazing race. And we just sort of, I remember saying to you a couple of times, like, why can't you do that anyway?
Yeah.
Why does it take this to get this performance out of you, man? Infuriating.
Mm, that's it. But it just kind of shows, doesn't it, that some people, I guess, get their determination from different places. And Cal is someone certainly that it appeared when he was down, he was certainly not out. And he got his determination from being the underdog, from being the one that shouldn't be able to do what he could do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he did finish nicely.
Yeah. And across the whole 2012 season, actually, he finished within the top eight in every single race he finished. There were five DNFs, so not so good. But he did finish seventh overall with 151 points. Dovi that year finished significantly higher. I think Dovi finished fourth that year off the top of my head. We discussed this 2 weeks ago, Steve, and I can't remember.
I think he did. I'm pretty sure he did finish fourth that year. But considering Crutchlow's injuries and how many races he missed, it's not a surprise.
Yeah. That's exactly it. So moving on to 2013, still with Tech 3 Yamaha. One of Cal's best seasons, I think, this 2013 season. Finished fifth overall, scoring four podiums. Two of them were seconds, two of them were thirds. The seconds came in France and Germany, and thirds in Italy and the Netherlands.
All right.
Every single race he finished, apart from one, was inside the top seven.
Yeah.
He did score two DNFs and scored 188 points on his way to finishing fifth.
Yes, that's not bad. That's not bad. It's an improvement. I know he was injured the year before, but it's an improvement. Two DNFs are far better than five.
Well, certainly. And actually, probably one of his best results throughout his MotoGP career was only two DNFs, to be fair.
Probably is. I mean, considering what? The year before, he scored 151 points with three less DNFs, 188 points.
Yeah, so what's that, 37 points more?
Yeah, so top of that, nice improvement, steady improvement. Uninjured season, I do believe, or if he was injured, it was only minor. He wasn't carrying the huge dents that he had from like previous years.
Yeah, definitely. And this was the year, actually, like I was really starting to follow Cal in this 2013 year. Because this was the year I was like, if a satellite rider is going to win a race, I was convinced it was going to be Cal Crutchlow. Because he was the only satellite rider that could regularly mix it at the front, score the odd podium. And I guess this was still within like the Alien era as well, wasn't it? You could still kind of predict the podiums quite easily at this point. But Cal was able to get in there every now and again.
Exactly. I mean, that was the year we went to Silverstone and got to see him crash, which was gutting because we were screaming for the Brit boys that year because we had like Bradley Smith in Moto3, Scott Redding in Moto2, and then Crutchlow in
Bradley Smith would have been his teammate that year in what? MotoGP, yeah.
Oh, he was, yes. Sorry. Who was checking on? Do we have a Brit into 125 then? Or was I screaming for someone completely...
Would Kevin McPhee have been in Moto3 at this point?
Might have been. I remember screaming for someone.
Or Danny Kent, maybe?
Yeah, he was there. Anyway, they were all there. I remember being very happy to be there. It was glorious weather. One of the first dry Brit weekends we'd had for a while. And it was just a fantastic weekend to be there.
Yeah, that's it. I remember seeing a lot of the pictures you've got. And every now and again, you still show me the pictures, like quite proud holiday photos. And I still get a bit green with envy.
Yes, yes, my four-hour queue to get Rossi's autograph was a bit much, but
you know, at least we got the autograph. Yeah, that's it.
We got it, and that hat is definitely... And actually, we got Crutchlow's.
I was going to say, didn't Sarah get Crutchlow's autograph?
She did, and there is a story behind this, which is a bit... It's not a sore point, but Crutchlow did get my missus to take a top off.
God. Now I really hope he is listening. We called him a bulldog earlier. Now we're describing the time that your wife-to-be took her top off for Cal Crutchlow.
Yes. Now, I should point out at this point, she did have a top underneath. We had just brought this Crutchlow shirt because despite the fact that the weather was glorious, up in the stand where we were at Cops, it was fucking freezing. So I bought a full-wore Silverstone jacket, which is actually sat just 2 feet away from me up there. I still got it, still wear it. And she bought a Crutchlow top, which whilst we were queuing up to get Rossi's autograph, all the riders were coming and going and doing their thing down this line of their motorhomes. And Crutchlow was just sat outside on a little white plastic picnic table with his family, having some drinks and was signing autographs. And Sarah wandered down, proudly displaying a new white Crutchlow t-shirt, and took it off, lobbed it over the fence, and got him to sign it.
That'll do the job. And then but the problem with that is, once he signed it, you can never wear it again.
No. This was the thing. We then, luckily, I had my backpack with me, so we just folded it up. And obviously, she had like other tops she had underneath.
She's just walking around in her bra for the rest of the time.
No, thank God. She did have other clothes on. But yeah, I was quite glad of that fact, though.
Yeah.
But it was a bit of a scrum. We did get to see who else was Hayden, Colin Edwards. There's loads of people, loads of the sort of Moto2, Moto3 guys.
Yeah.
That were banging about. We were the other side of the fence because we didn't have pit passes. We were the wrong side of the fence by the trucks. So it was a bit of a scrum. And there was one Italian guy there, bless him. He was really nice, but he had a massive Rossi flag on this huge pole. And he was just waving everywhere, smacking everyone with his bloody flagpole. And everyone was getting really arsed off with him. And it was like little kids in there like, Daddy, why is he waving that flag? And he was just like, he had hundreds and hundreds of autographs on his flag, so he must follow them everywhere.
Yeah.
And like just dipped it over the fence, and it was one of the first things Rossi went to. And he just trundled off, and all you see was this flag over this like shoulder, like, trotting off. Just really pleased with himself after smacking hundreds of people in the face.
So speaking of Italians, let's move on to 2014.
Let's go for it.
In 2014, saw Crutchlow join the Factory Ducati squad, signing a 2-year deal. I mean, it was a shit season when you look at it, wasn't it? It was hampered by mechanical failures and by tyre issues. He scored a podium in Aragon. His only podium of the year. He did have a good chance at a podium in Phillip Island, where he was running
goes
in
well
second.
At Phillip Island, actually,
he does go very well as Phillip Island, as we will come on to.
Yes.
But he crashed out of second at Phillip Island, and I believe he crashed out because he let his tyres get too cold because he slowed the pace, I think is what he said. He slowed the pace and... that meant the tyre cooled and then he just lost it. And I remember watching it and I remember being devastated when I saw his red and white Ducati just sliding into the gravel. Like, oh, fuck, he's had such a terrible year. It's near the end of the season. I just wanted to see him do something.
I think everyone did at that point. I think everyone was so pissed off. You know, he looked good. He'd sort of been building nicely with Tech 3, started getting some good results, had some injuries and then come back better. Looked really promising. And, you know, decided to go to Ducati, and everyone was like,
Well, I was quite excited for him to go to Ducati. Dovi had done it the year before, and there was talk that it would have been Cal then, but Dovi had a better season, so fair enough, they signed Dovi.
Yeah.
And I was quite excited for it. I thought, Cal's quite an aggressive rider, he's quite the fighter, that's what the Ducati needs, this could be good for him. And I really did think it was going to work well, and I think that was the optimistic young British fan within me. Was really stoked to see him go to a factory squad because I thought there's no chance he's going to get in the factory Yamaha team. That's done. That door is closed for years now. So this is the next best thing. There's a factory ride open to him. Let's see what he can do. But yeah, it didn't go well, did it? He crashed out in Austin, injured his hand, missed the Argentine GP. Like we say, he scored the podium in Aragon. He crashed out from a podium in Phillip Island.
And it was just mechanical after mechanical, wasn't it? One after the other.
Yeah, and the real thorn in his side was Andrea Iannone that year, riding for the Pramac squad, and fuck, he was fast. Do you remember watching this year? I remember seeing Iannone just streaking out of the blocks, and he'd be like really near the front for 3 or 4 laps, 5, 6 laps sometimes, but you just always knew he was going to crash.
Yeah.
You always knew he was going to crash. But he was so fast. And there's that, the old adage, isn't there, is you can make a crashy rider not crash, but you can't make a slow rider fast.
No.
So Iannone was fast. All they had to do was rein in the crashing, and Ducati saw this. And despite the fact Cal had a 2-year deal with Ducati. After a single year, he was booted out and Iannone was brought in.
All right. I actually bet he was bloody glad to get the boot as well.
I don't think he was too upset about it. I imagine he got a healthy payoff because that's how contracts work. He moved to the LCR Honda squad.
When he moved there, I was just like, oh my God, is this going to be good? Is it not? As he got so used to the Yamaha, which was really good at that time. Like you said, I thought his riding style would suit the Ducati as well.
We were being told, isn't it? That's what the commentators were telling us.
Yeah, I just had it in the back of my head that he got so used to riding in such a way that we know the Ducati was okay at that point.
Oh, was it in 2014?
Well, it was okay. It wasn't great.
I'm not sure it scored a podium in 2014, did it?
I don't think it did, but it was better than what we've seen in the past.
That's a very good point. It was much better than we had seen in the past.
But it was still a massive risk. And when, 2014 come around, we started seeing these results in mechanicals, the crash of the hand. It was like, oh my God, get out. My first thought was get out. And then he did sign out. And I was so relieved that he'd gone.
Yeah.
And, at this point, Marquez was on the grid crushing it with a Honda. And it just looked like the place to be. I was so happy at that point that he'd actually got himself on the Honda and off of this bloody Ducati. The 2015 for me is when I really started perking up and thinking, right, I'm watching this guy.
Yeah, that's fair. And to correct myself here, Ducati did score some podiums with Andrea Dovizioso in 2014.
Which makes Cal's season look even worse.
Certainly. In which Cal got his one podium. Of course it got podiums. Cal got a podium. We were just discussing this. And yet I seem to just ignore that as we were talking about it.
That's because we're just running the Ducati in the ground. It's fine.
Yeah, that's it. Right. Well, ignore me because I don't know what's going on. But Cal did score 8 DNFs that season, had a big chunk of finishes outside the top 10 and right. scored 13th in the title with just 74 points.
Not good compared to his seasons.
Ooh, that's almost as bad as his first year in MotoGP.
That's not good. A time to forget. At least it was just a 1-year blip.
Yes, that's fair.
He didn't have to come back for round two going, oh my God.
No, because he did, like we have discussed, move to the LCR Honda squad for 2015. We talk about his time with LCR Honda, shall we take another quick break, Steve? And then we will be back.
Let's go for another quick break.
Right, so thank you for bearing with us, guys. Steve's having problems with his headphones, but we're back in the room. We know what's going on. 2015, Cal Crutchlow joins LCR Honda. 2015 was a pretty good year. I think most of Cal's career with Honda was pretty good, actually.
It wasn't bad, was it? It started pretty well. It was definitely a lot better than the season before. And it looked promising. From the off, it looked better.
Yes. He scored, 2 7th places in the first two races, scored a third place, so a podium in Argentina, which at the time was the third race of the year.
Yes.
Had 3 retirements through the year, but eventually finished 8th overall with 125 points. So a good better than his time with Ducati.
Yeah. If you're going to start a new career, not a new career, but if you're going to start with a new team, start it well. It doesn't have to be amazing. Just start well. Set yourself up nicely, and he certainly did that nicely.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. And I was looking back for this show at the 2015 season, like the table on Wikipedia. Wikipedia is very, very good for MotoGP season results. The tables are much better laid out than on the actual MotoGP website. See everything in one shot, at one screen, everything's there.
I like the MotoGP website, but it's overly complicated.
Yeah, it gives you a lot of detail. If you need the really granular detail, then the MotoGP website's great. But if you just want a good overview on just the table for the seasons, Wikipedia is really on point for that.
Yeah, I did have 3 or 4 screens up in front of me at the time when I was writing some notes down. And I was like, this is just hard to read. That's nice. We'll close that one. We'll go Wiki.
Yeah, I like the Wikipedia one. I do go back and check it with MotoGP one because I don't 100% trust Wikipedia all the time, but most of the time it's pretty bang on.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
But I was looking at the season, looking at the results, and I'd sort of forgotten. I know I've mentioned it loads on the show about how much I loved that 2015 season. It was so good. I was traveling in Southeast Asia at the time towards the end of the year, and I was still having to find like pubs and like restaurants and hostels that had what channel was it? Oh, was it on Fox Sport at the time? I could watch it out there. So I was having to find places to show it, and I would only stay in hostels if they had the sport channel, so I knew I could watch the race on a Sunday. I was really into it, and the season was so good, and just looking at it and seeing the, even on the table, the duel Lorenzo and Rossi had throughout the year was, it was so good. Oh, what a year.
That was good. That was a good year. Were we podcasting then?
No, we started in 2017. We started in, I say 2017. Was 2017...
2016, like halfway through 2016 or something.
It might have been. I remember we certainly spoke about Zarco's first year in OGP, which I think was 2017. But I feel like a lot this off season we've sort of tried to work out when we actually started doing the show, because none of those original shows exist anymore online.
No, they've all disappeared into the ether, haven't they?
They have. It was sometime. We certainly were doing the show at the start of 2017.
Absolutely.
And I think we may have started partway through 2016.
Yeah, I think we hit the sort of second half, maybe second third of the third of the 2016 season, something like that. Like, we didn't do it the whole season, we picked it up sort of halfway through, so
that's it. And it was to be fair it was probably like three shows that we did where we just spoke about eight races at a time.
I think that was it. I think we covered the whole season, we just went like massive blocks, didn't we?
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it.
And watched a lot of telly at the time.
You did watch a lot of telly at the time. A lot of just silently just watching races and recording the silence.
Yeah, I still remember there was one day we were like both sort of suddenly shouted at the same time, like, speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop watching the race back, speak, man.
It's not really a wonder no one listened to those early shows.
Yeah, that is true. They probably turned on like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
They probably turned on and think that now.
Yeah, exactly. Now we just chat shit that's not MotoGP related and we speak for 2 hours at a time when there's literally no racing on. Why are we speaking for this long, Steve? I'm still
not
sure.
Because we love it. Because we love talking all things MotoGP.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll give you that. So let's move it to 2016. Still with LCR Honda. In fact, we remain with LCR Honda throughout the rest of the career at this point. This was Crutchlow's year, wasn't it? 2016.
This was, yeah. Yes, this was Crutchlow's year. It's one of my favourite years for him.
Yeah, and quite a ridiculous year in MotoGP full stop. This was the nine winners in nine races, wasn't it? The unreal Jack Miller goes and wins a race on the Mark VDS Honda in that soaking wet Assen race. We saw some weird things happen, but
it was a very bizarre year, but one of the most memorable years.
Certainly. And we saw Crutchlow win his first race in Brno. It was Brno. Soaking wet race. Cal chooses the hard wet tyre. Because this was the point where we had it. Do you remember we had intermediate tyres here as
That's
well?
That's it. Yeah, they stopped it. Was it 2017?
I think we had intermediate tyres for 1 year. And I think 2016 was that 1 year.
That's it. He chose the hard front tyre.
He chose the hard wet tyre because there was the hard wet and the soft wet.
That's the one. Yes. He chose it and everyone at the time was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What are you doing? And then,
And he dropped like a stone in the early laps and we're all like, oh no, Cal, what have you done for fuck's sake? And then, wow, halfway through the race, you're like, Cal's going 3 seconds a lap faster than everyone.
That's it, yeah. Took that gamble and my God, did it pay off.
Yeah, and it really paid off and he comfortably won the race, becoming the first British winner since Barry Sheen in 1981.
All right, that was a good year.
What, 1981?
It was.
Was that the year you were born, Steve?
Yes.
For a minute, I was like, is this an advertising slogan? No, that's 1664. I'm like, where is 1981 come from?
Your advertising slogan is a beer.
Mate, look... we all understand right now, like, if I'm going to be remembering any advertising slogans, it's going to be a booze one, isn't it?
going to be an alcohol one.
Exactly. So further on in 2016, Cal Crutchlow does it again in Australia. It's a dry race. Once again, though, it's a tyre choice, isn't it?
It was, yes.
He made a good choice on the hard tyre. Mark Marquez crashed from the lead, I believe.
Yes, yeah, he burned that one.
But Cal was closing in on him at the time, but was the gap big enough, or was the gap small enough that Cal would be able to cover it and overtake Marquez? Maybe not, arguably, but it doesn't matter.
No, he binned it. Cal won.
Exactly. To finish first, you must finish. Exactly. And Mark Marquez failed in that, and Cal won the race, becoming the first Brit to ever win a Premier Class race in Australia, I believe.
Yes, he is. I think that'll stand, that accolade, for quite a while as well.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. Across that 2016 season, Cal scored two further podiums. Did have 60 NFs, though, which kind of marred the season a little.
Yeah, there is that. But we'll ignore that because he had a bloody good year other than that.
That's fair. Race wins are really what did it, wasn't it? 2016 was a really... There was quite a fun couple of years, because 2015 had the really, like I've just described, that really fun duel between Lorenzo and Rossi, and it was a really great year. Probably my favourite year of MotoGP I've watched was 2015.
Yeah, I'll go with you on that one.
But 2016 was also great for other reasons. It was the inconsistencies. It was... I don't know how many races Marquez won that year, but I think it was only four, maybe five?
It wasn't many. It wasn't the domination that we were used to seeing.
No,
I think
certainly
that's what
not.
Suddenly made everyone perk up and like, he's beatable.
Yeah, and everyone was beating him at some point. Cal beat him. Jack Miller beat him. Like, to race wins, this is. Dovi beat him to race wins. Rossi and Lorenzo both had race wins. Like, a lot of people were winning races that year.
Yeah, it was such a cracking season. It was so bonkers. You know, very similar to this season in a way. But yeah, we hadn't seen anything like that before. And all of a sudden, everyone was like, what the hell is going on? This is absolutely mental.
Yeah.
Two of the best years right there.
Yeah, certainly were. So that brings us on to 2017.
It does.
2017 saw Crutchlow crash out of the first round of Qatar, took a podium in Argentina. He had some consistent top five finishes throughout the year, but also had five more DNFs and did have a good chunk of finishes outside the top 10.
Yeah, it's not really sure what went on this year with him. Because he was on coming off the back of two really, really good years.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it was just like something flicked. Something changed.
And yeah, I don't know. Was it the bike, maybe, 2017? How was the Honda in 2017?
Not great. I think that was the one that started the year almost unrideable. And we saw Marquez spinning it up all the time and not being out of control and do what we were used to seeing him do with it.
Okay. So that would be part of the reason then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think the bike was a bit of a dog that year. And Crutchlow was just unfortunately on the Honda and suffered the same woes as the other Honda riders.
Yeah, that's it. But those the consistent finishes he had. I mean, he finished ninth overall with 112 points, but the consistency of his finishes saw him extend his contract. And I think this is the time he actually signed the HRC contract, wasn't it?
Yes, I think he went from an LCR Honda contract here to a proper HRC.
Yes, in-house. A full factory contract, but still riding the LCR bike.
Yeah, because you'd be contracted to the factory as opposed to the team, right?
Yes, that's exactly the case, which meant that LCR were probably pretty stoked because it meant Honda were paying the bills.
Exactly. They were like, well, you ride for us and you pay the bills and happy days.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So for 2018, with that HRC contract nicely in hand and now being almost a fully fledged Honda test rider, wasn't he? He was testing parts all over the place for the next 3 years from this point.
Yeah, he was going a bit nuts by this point. He was sort of everywhere, this boy.
Yeah.
Racing, testing, everywhere. PR, the lot at this point, wasn't he?
Becoming that's a bit it. Although he's not a guy I'd roll out for PR days.
No, but he did do a lot of interviews, didn't he? He would be a worry for me. If you rolled him in front of the camera, I'd be at the back behind that camera going, fucking shut up.
Yeah, exactly. Although he might be the kind of person that I personally would put out in front of the camera because part of me just wants to watch the world burn. And I feel like Cal's the guy to set it on fire. But from a corporation point of view, you're right. You don't want Cal out in front of the cameras.
Stood behind that camera, you've got a legal team. you know, someone with that auto cue board holding it up going, just say this.
Yeah, exactly.
And Crutchlow's just like mowing them all down going, no, I'm saying this.
That's it. You can prep him for days on the way in. Whatever you do, Cal, don't say the bike's shit. Don't say the bike's shit. Don't say the bike's shit. Interview. Cal, how's the bike? It's shit.
Yeah, exactly that. I love the honesty. I think that's something that a lot of people lack.
A lot of people don't like him for it as well. Like a lot of riders and a lot of TV personalities lack the honesty. But then people don't like you if you are honest. It's a weird double-edged sword.
It is, yeah. See, personally, I would rather the bad news just be thrown at me like a brick.
Yeah,
and just get it all in the face. I don't want to be tenderfoot around. I just want to hear it full bore, bang, give it to me. Get it out of the way. Let's deal with it. And I feel like he would be the man to deliver that bad news.
Yeah.
You know, he would just give it to you straight.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So that 2018 season, he scored another win in Argentina. I remember that race being pretty bonkers. In fact, I remember seeing, did I watch this race with you? I think I was around your house watching this race.
I was then thinking, like, did we watch this one together?
This was the Jack Miller ridiculous start race, wasn't it?
Yeah, where he was just, like, everyone else was three rows back because they'd all bailed on the starting grid to change tyres. And Jack was sort of stood there going, oh, come on,
yeah,
let's go.
That's exactly.
Made
I remember
your choices.
Watching it.
Deal with it.
That was exactly it. I remember sitting there at your house, like, "Fuck, what's happening here?" I was like, "I'll go out for a fag. We'll see what happens." I come back in. I'm like, "Still nothing's happening." I'm going out for another smoke. Go out. Come back in. I'm like, "Bloody hell, nothing's happening." And then when the race got going, I remember being like, "Shit, this is Rins, Zarco, and Cal fighting for the win." I'm like, "I don't give a shit which one of these guys wins, because whichever one wins, it's gonna be amazing."
Yeah, exactly. It was such a crazy race. And I remember sitting there, we were just like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, like, and this is one of the very few races that we've, as much as we talk MotoGP and we watch MotoGP at the same time and we text each other about it all the time, there's very few occasions we've actually sat down and watched a race together.
Yeah, I think there's only two, isn't there?
Maybe this one and the Valencia finale in 2018?
2018. We nipped down to London, didn't we, at the bike shed.
Yeah. Was that 2018 or was that 2019? No, it would have been 2018.
2018, yeah. Good day out there.
It was a good day out. If anyone gets a chance, go help the bike shed for a MotoGP race because it is cracking, but maybe wait till after COVID.
Yeah, don't go at the minute. Don't go at the minute. But yeah, get the opportunity. Fantastic atmosphere. Cause it was, what, probably 200 people in there?
Bro, it was full. It was a good one. It was really good. It was a really fun day. I remember they wouldn't serve us beer because it was a Sunday and before midday. And as you can imagine, I was raging.
He was gagging.
I was like, right, we're going to have a fry up and then it'll be time for beer.
That was quite funny, actually. We got there and we're like, we've never been. It's big. If you're not from the UK, it's a big, look it up. They're on Instagram. They're all over the world. They're actually opening up a new place in LA at the minute.
Are they?
Yeah. They're
probably
expanded.
Not going to be going to that anytime soon, mate.
No, I'd love to go. But yeah, well, I'm going to have to let them know we're giving them a massive plug on their show.
Yeah, exactly. Might go and pay for our plane fare over there. We get a sponsored trip to LA.
Yeah, but check it out. It is just a bikers club for bikers. And it's not just for bikers. You can take your family there. You can have a meal. They do corporate stuff, meetings, interviews, loads of stuff. The bike show they do every year is amazing. Food's off the hook. The beer's really good. But anyway, Tim and I rock up on there on a Sunday. And we have to get the bus down from our little home in Norfolk so we can have a beer. We get to London, we get the tube, we find the place, we're like, yes, get the food orders, we'll have a beer. And this bloke looks at us and went, can't give you beer.
Yeah, I was like, why?
I was like, good, what the hell? And then we realised it was like 11 o'clock on a Sunday.
I didn't realise this because I wasn't really aware that this was a rule. It was only after he told me and made me look like a right twat that I was like, okay, fair enough, yeah, that makes sense.
But I love the way we weren't the only ones, because as soon as it struck 12, these people come out with like hundreds of pints on trays and we're just like spewing them everywhere. We're like, yes, over here.
Finally. Yeah.
Take this heathen water stuff away.
Yeah, that was a fun one, man.
That was good. That was Zarco's getting wiped out from behind by a bike race.
God, yeah, that was a scary crash. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, that was the only time I've heard roughly 200 people all collectively gasp at the same time.
Yeah, that was a big one. Was scary. But anyway, Cal Crutchlow.
Let's get back into it.
That was 2018, wasn't it? It wasn't 2019.
That was 2019, sorry.
Was that 2019? We've just discussed it like it was 2018, but yeah, I think it was 2019.
Yeah, it's amazing how we can't remember what we did a couple of years ago.
Yeah, mate, I don't know what I did yesterday, let alone anything else.
I am struggling in this lockdown. I am seriously struggling with dates, days, times, everything. It's all blurring into one big amalgamation of like, hey.
It sort of always does for me. Like, I've not worked a job that depended on me knowing the day since I was, 23, maybe? So it's been like almost 7 years since I've worked a job that required me to know the day. So I just haven't known the days at all. And even now, it's Tuesday. It's obviously Tuesday. We're recording, so I know it's a Tuesday. But aside from that, not a clue.
No. I just sent you a message.
Oh,
that's what that flash in my phone up was.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to get that. My phone's in airplane mode.
Oh, you're on airplane mode because you're recording. We went to the bike shed on the 23rd of November 2019.
It was 2019. Okay, so it was an entire year after we've just been discussing.
All right, we got there eventually. We're a little bit late to the party, but we got there.
Yeah, that's fine. We worked it out eventually, mate. But in 2018, Cal Crutchlow scored 3 podium finishes after his win in Argentina.
He did.
148 points and ended the season in 7th place. He did miss the final 3 rounds due to injury.
This is the one where he buckled his leg, wasn't it?
It's either his leg or his wrist most of the time.
I believe this one was the leg. Towards the end of the season, I think that was the one where he really screwed his leg up. Lower leg injuries at Phillip Island.
Okay. Oh, yes. I think I remember that.
Really,
that was a big crash. Yeah, because we thought that was career over at that point.
Yes. Yeah, that was the one. Which, to me, looking back at it now, with this and then what happens last year / this year with his injuries, this was sort of like the ones that really started to take their toll. Yeah. It was a big, big injury. We've seen him like bust ankles and come back and race, but these were the ones that started to make him miss races.
Yeah. Yeah, that's certainly the case. But we did see him after Argentina. It was only round 2, but we did see him actually leading the championship and becoming the first Brit to do so since Barry Sheen.
We did. Yes, we did. He likes to pick up a few little accolades like this along the way, doesn't he?
Everything is since Barry Sheen in Cal Crutchlow's career. First Brit to do this since Barry Sheen.
That's because we don't produce many GP riders, do we, from the UK or over here?
No, we don't. Like, we don't, especially not. We seem to produce enough Premier Class and GP riders, full stop, so that there's a constant presence in the paddock of British riders. Yeah. But not a constant presence of British winners. It's not like the Italians, like the Spaniards, even like the Americans or the Australians. Like, we're not producing the same level of GP riders. However, they all go into the superbike paddocks, like we've discussed.
That's it. Yeah, but now we've got the British Talent Cup, the Asian Talent Cup. That is their way of now feeding talent through. Before, we are superbike, super sport.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. And hopefully that British Talent Cup will push more people in the next 10 years into the GP paddocks.
Yes, absolutely. That is definitely one I'm going to keep a massive close eye on.
Yeah, that's certainly a good shout.
Yeah, because that will just be nice to see. And the Asian Talent Cup, all of them, just see the young, real young guys get their first sort of lick on these bikes.
Yeah.
And see what they could do. So there's going to be some nice, nice racing.
Yep, definitely. So 2019 then, sees Cal still with LCR Honda. He took 3 podium finishes and 60 NFs and finished 9th in the championship that year.
He did. Not a great year. The DNFs have started to sort of add up again.
Yeah, exactly. There's a couple of years where even with the high level of DNFs, he was still scoring enough points and enough high finishes to kind of counteract that in a way, but it certainly got to the point, hasn't it? And it certainly was then, let alone the following year, where it's kind of like you're looking at it now, like, it's got to be time to stop soon. These crashes are starting to get a bit much.
That's it. You know, I've joked in the past, like, we could make a Terminator out of you two. But definitely, he's looked in the last year, 2 years, like they're really starting to hurt.
Yeah.
You know? We look at, like, we'll get on to 2020 now, but you start looking at how he looked this year in the paddock with his injuries. I don't think any amount of painkillers or any amount of drugs were going to stop him going through a severe amount of pain.
No, he's not carrying the injury. Well, he's carrying the injuries much worse than he was in the early years. It's not like that's before it. Where he could, you know, do the hopping on one leg and then just go and race to sixth. No. Like, that's not happening anymore.
No, I reckon if you walked into that medical center and the first thing they said to him was like fitness test, you'd probably go, no.
Yeah, exactly.
He'd just sit back down again. Or he'd have a go, but I can't see him passing it.
No, well, I think maybe part of him would be willing to fail it. He'd just be like, I'm out. I can't be bothered. This is hurting too much. I've hurt myself too many times. I'm done.
Aye.
And that brings us to 2020, doesn't it? Quite nicely. It was a fucking awful season, whatever way you look at it.
It wasn't great.
It was blighted by injury. He missed two races throughout the year. It was riding injured practically every race. And if he didn't have a race or an injury from a race, he had an injury because he fell down a fucking step after getting a COVID test. Like, there was just nothing insane he could do right this year.
It didn't happen, did it? The stars did not align. They were so far scattered apart, you couldn't see them in the dark. It was just awful. I think every time we turned the telly on, we're like, oh, Christ, now what's going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't just the TV. Do you remember we saw on Instagram? He posted that video of his arm pump surgery.
Oh, that was insane. That was sick. I showed Sarah that. She was gagging.
Yeah, it really wasn't good.
But then, like, the aftermath, all that fluid, and like then the skin gets stuck to the muscle.
Yeah, and for a long time, he suffered with that for the rest of the season.
He did. He carried that injury for a long, long time. Mm. Such a shame. Such a shame. But... Yeah. This is the reality of motorcycle racing. If you crash a lot and get injured a lot, eventually that is going to take its toll.
It's the sad reality, isn't it? And this season really spelled it out. It was his worst season in MotoGP. His best finish was 8th across the year. He finished 18th overall with just 32 points. Like, it's less than half the points of his first season in MotoGP.
That's not good. I don't know about anyone else, I don't know about you. When he announced that this is going to be his last full-time riding season, I was actually really relieved and glad.
I think we said it on the show. I wish he'd done it a year earlier.
Yeah, I think we did. I was getting to the point where I was really worried that one of these crashes or injuries was actually going to lead to something like life-changing.
Yeah.
I was already starting to think, you know, that arm.
And I'm sure it will be. I'm sure his joints and his bones are going to be arthritic as fuck now. Like, he's going to be suffering from this for the rest of his life.
Oh, God, yeah. Can you imagine the amount of scar tissue in that arm, the ankles? You know, and the guy's not a slouch. You look at his cycling abilities. You know, that will keep him going. But even that is working the bones, working the muscles. And as he gets older, that is going to start to have a little bit more of a detrimental effect.
Yeah, at least the cycling is a low-impact sport, isn't it? It's not like running. It's not like football and stuff.
No, that's it. As long as he stays away from like the American football, he'll be all right.
That's it. So this was the year we saw him retire from a full-time ride. As we've discussed, 2021, he's going to be the test rider for Yamaha, replacing Jorge Lorenzo. It's a shame the last two or three seasons have been such a mess for him, because he really had potential. And if you've added to the notes here, if he wasn't injured so much through his career, he probably would have won more races. He would have had way higher finishing positions.
Absolutely.
Would he have fought for a championship? Probably not, to be fair. No. But the pace he showed and when he had it, he certainly could have won more races. He certainly was fast enough to win a race or two every year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if he'd have gone through, let's say, for instance, 5 seasons, we'll take 2015, so we'll go back a couple, let's go 2012, start from there. If he'd have had, from 2012 to 2017, uninjured, I think we would have seen a regular podium contender nearly every race.
Yeah.
It's just unfortunate that those races were marred by so many injuries.
Yeah.
And in one interview, I can't remember exactly how he worded it, something along the lines of he thought personally that he had overachieved. But I think it's the other way. I think if we'd just seen uninjured Crutchlow, he'd massively underachieved what he could have done.
I think you're right.
That's not what we saw. We've seen a very injured Crutchlow for many, many seasons. And he's still done amazing with what the cards he's been dealt.
That's it. And we've got to say, isn't it, is a lot of it is because he was, as we've discussed, he was quite a crash-happy rider. He was a guy that would really 110% every single time. And when you're riding like that, I mean, he had seasons where he crashed more than in more than a third of races. And that's going to happen if you're pushing the limit so hard. He was a worker. Maybe not the most naturally talented guy on the grid. He's not a Marc Marquez. He's not a Casey Stoner. But he was really willing to put it all on the line. And it came back to bite him plenty of times.
Yeah. I mean, you can't argue that there's no one else with his kind of dogged determination in the paddock.
No.
He would just go out and fight and fight and fight. And that's it.
Yeah. That pretty much covers it. There is obviously talk that he'll be wildcarding. Maybe next year if wildcards are allowed. I mean, if his Yamaha testing career goes on longer, maybe he'll wildcard again in the future.
Mm.
If you saw him on a Yamaha this year, Steve, how do you think he'll perform?
I think switching back to the Yamaha with all that's going on at the minute, if we see him on the grid this year, I don't think he'll do amazingly. I think we will see probably a mid-table finish.
Yeah, I think points would be pretty good.
I think aiming for a 10th would be a good result. If it was a Honda, I think he might do a little bit better, just because of the fact that he's been on the Honda for so long.
Yeah, I think the Honda's a harder bike to ride, isn't it, as well? Like, the Yamaha is probably still a more rider-friendly bike than the Honda.
Yeah, but whatever happens, I think mid-table would be a good day at the office for a wild card.
Yeah, that's a good shout. So you guys listening, what do you think? If Cal comes back, do you think you'll see him scoring 1 point? Do you think we'll see him top 10? Do you think somehow he's going to manage to score a podium? Just let us know. And if you do want to let us know, or you have any questions or comments for us, you can send them to...
We are For the Love of MotoGP. You can look us up on Instagram and Twitter. We also have a Facebook page. Give that a like and a subscribe. Or drop us an email. We are For the Love of MotoGP @gmail.com.
And then if you could do us a solid, guys, if you are, once you're done listening to the show, if you can just give us a quick rating, a quick review wherever you're listening, that would be super helpful. And I think, Steve, unless you've got anything else?
I don't think so, mate. I think we've covered Mr. Crutchlow quite nicely.
Then I think that's it for this week.
That is, mate. Yeah. Another week closer to the start of the season.
Another week closer to the start of the season, in which we're looking at maybe 6 weeks till the start of the season.
Six weeks till Qatar testing,
I think.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Not wrong. 1, 2, 3. Oh, that is close.
So it is getting close. And we should have enough shows to fill all of that time, which is good.
We will make enough shows to fill all of that time, Timbo. We can talk MotoGP till the cows come home, mate.
Clearly, because this year we've really been chatting shit for hours.
We have. And 90% of it is all MotoGP related. The other 10% is just booze.
You really think 90% of the time we spend talking on the podcast is about MotoGP?
Absolutely not. I just thought I'd make it sound a bit better. It's... I was hoping you're going to roll with me there, mate.
I couldn't tell. I missed the winking. I think you froze on video for me a minute there.
There's just this image of me and Tim screaming.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't see that, but that's just me pulling a funny face.
Good. Right, let's stop there, shall we, before we rely on the video medium too much for the people listening.
Let's do it.
Right, guys. So thank you very much for listening, and we will be back with you next week. Remember, guys, stay safe, look after each other, elbow bumps, fist bumps, mask it or casket, guys. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Take care, guys.
Music is by Andrew Greenwood. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.